right, this is raw, real time, high performance West Coach Car Talk. I don't know, Steve. How many more car talks do you think we can get in? This might be the one and only.
This might be it. But we'll see what happens here.
But we were talking, and we figured we might as well get mic'd up and talk about qualities that we look for in athletes. Now that we've aged, we've seen a lot of things as coaches at a variety of levels, and that we're currently coming hot in the recruiting season, not only for collegiate athletes, high school athletes going to college, but also collegiate athletes turning what we call pro. So yeah, we'll start off with Steve because, you know, you're right here coming on the beginning of signing day. And so how do you make those decisions in the recruiting process? You know, what are you looking at besides just marks on a piece of paper or places in a race?
Oh man, that's, you know, what I look for is a couple things. It's first, coachability.
What is that? How, put a pin in that. Like, give me some things that are key, like, landmarks of coachability.
Does this person want to come in and learn?
Ooh.
Right? Does this person, like, think that his high school training is the best in the world and that he doesn't need to change? Or is he saying, hey, coach, like, I want to know how to get better. Like, how do I get better? Like, you've got some wisdom. I want to do that. And I think that's really important because from what I've seen, whether it's high school to college or college to pro or even pro to, you know, other pro group, is that ability to be coach, that ability to say, hey, like, this is different from what I've done in the past, but, like, you got reasons for it, I'm in. Like, I'm bought in. So if we can have that, then I know we're off into the good space. And then kind of piggybacking off of that, the other thing I look for is what I'll just kind of broadly classify as ego.
Right, okay.
And ego being, is it all about them, right? Are they a taker, right? Where it's like, give, you know, it's about me and my performance and nothing else matters.
Right.
Right? Or are they someone who's going to, you know, elevate the whole culture, the whole squad, the whole, you know, environment, right? And, you know, when you look at it from a sense of simply elevating or detracting from an environment, then it kind of becomes pretty simple, right? Because the way I see it is, regardless of your speed, if you can add to what we're doing, then you're bringing something.
Right. It's, you know, I'm going to piggyback on that. I feel the same way. You know, ego is a very, you know, sometimes negative, carries a negative connotation because we equate it with narcissism, right? Or too unhealthy narcissism. And every athlete needs a degree of narcissism, without a doubt. You have to have an ego to believe you can do difficult things. And that's what racing is. It's lining up ready for difficult. So the key that you said is, do you make a contribution? Do you bring something to the table? Do you give more than you take? And that's really in any team dynamic or any coach-athlete relationship dynamic, even if you're working one-to-one with the lone wolf type athlete, it's, do they have some quality of giving? Or do they do some kind of charity? Do they make some type of contribution? Because that's key. And then going back, right, exactly, to the learning mindset or the growth mindset. Open mind. I might not have all the right answers. I might not know everything. I haven't been taught everything. I'm not fully cooked. And then coming up to practice to get better. We only get better by learning. And it doesn't mean you're bad for not knowing all the knowledge. For knowing at age 18 or age 22 or even age 30, everything in the world there is to know about distance running. It doesn't mean you're bad or you know or don't know the perfect system. But you know what works well for you, but you're also curious to explore and discover elements or things or practices or types of training that you had no exposure to that might work.
Yes, it's that explorer's mindset, right? It's the figuring out and the freedom to see if something works. You know, it's actually like the true scientific method, right?
Yeah, yep.
Not the like scientism. Scientism, as Nassim Taleb likes to say, of, like, hey, it's not in a research article, but, like, the true scientific curiosity of, like, exploring if something works and if it doesn't, or if it doesn't, and just kind of going where that evidence finds you. And I think, you know, the other thing, or the things that this all comes down to is almost that contribution that you give to the program and the culture. And I really think that you can get a good sense of that in just meeting someone, talking with them, having, like, actual real dialogue, right? And if you do that and ask the right questions and aren't just consumed by the times that they ran, like, you can make some good inroads on that.
It's the body language too, right? It's seeing how their posture is, seeing what, when they talk about things not related to themselves, when they talk about elements of their training or elements of racing, you know, where are their eyes, you know, where's their shoulders, how are they standing or sitting? You're trying to find genuine people who genuinely love the culture of athletics and distance running and sport and the culture of preparation. Because I know sometimes you get people who are just, you know, training warriors and will train and love the training environment, but you get into the race or competitive setting and they wilt. And then you get the exact inverse. People who just, hey, I'll lace them up on game day, but I'm going to be a liability and not be where I'm supposed to be come practice time, or where, or do what I'm supposed to do as a teammate to help the general culture, because I'm just here to race, baby.
Yeah, you know, what you're looking for is that excitement, right? Because that tells you if they actually are truly enjoy what they're doing and are care about it and are passionate, or if they're doing it for other reasons, right? I think if you can get down to the core of their why, right? Why do they pursue this activity that is really difficult? You can kind of, you know where they stand. And I think coming out of the high school ranks, a lot of times what you see is you see athletes who might be have run some really good times, but their why is, you know, to please a parent, right? Or, you know, because my coach is a hard ass and, you know, I signed up for this and, like, I'm only motivated because my coach is on me all the time. And I think you have to really look out for those things, because we have a, we have, like, almost a bias to think, like, oh, this person's run really fast, so they're really motivated, right? And we take it for granted. But the reality is, and, you know, we've all seen this, at every single level, like, you see every single different type of motivation available. So you have to do the hard work as a coach to try and figure out, you know, what makes this kid tick.
Yeah, even from a collegiate going, transitioning to post-collegiate standpoint, it's, are they intrinsically motivated? Do they identify with the sport and with the competitive arena as something that is, they do for free, they do as a hobby, they do part-time? And this transfers to anyone at any level, whether you're trying to make a world team or trying to just set a PR and break 4 hours for the marathon, right? That intrinsic motivation of being a self-starter, getting up in the morning, putting your shoes on, getting out the door for the run. It's not even a conversation. It's not even, there's no motivation. The motivation is a self-renewable resource, right? And that's, I think, often overlooked, because you get on a piece of paper all these impressive marks or all these impressive places, and the person is simply excited about winning, excited about getting better, and excited only about the glory and accolades, but they're not excited about the long play, you know, playing the long game, the infinite game, where they keep showing up and keep learning and keep growing.
Yeah, you know, what I look at it is, what happens when that athlete stops winning?
Yes.
Right? Exactly. Because, like, at every level, you're going to get to a point where you stop winning. And, you know, I see this all the time from high school to college, is, you know, you get that kid who maybe does really well in his area or his state and is used to being the top dog and wins a lot. And all of a sudden, you get to college, you get your ass kicked a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you finish 180th place at pre-nats, and it's a good race. And all of a sudden, that motivation wanes because the spotlight's gone. Like, your motivation that was there from high school of, like, being good at something, you know, winning meets, getting accolades is gone. So the athlete's kind of motivation just fades, and he doesn't fulfill his potential because, you you know, his motivation was coming from a wrong place.
It's, you know, difference between motivation for accolades versus the motivation for the action. The action of the sport, the action of getting better, like the process that we talk about and try to unpack as much as we can in these dialogues, versus the accoutrements of success. Oh, do I have the latest gear, the newest watch? Do I have the fanciest recovery drink that costs the most? It's surprising that people actually think that that's the difference maker, is the luxury of tools that you're using to do this important work, when 99% of it, it's not about the shoes. It's about what you do in the shoes.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point and 100% accurate. And I think what it does is, I think that is a result of, we can see, grasp, and understand the shoes, the watches, the recoveries, the Normatex, the drinks, and all that gadgets, the vitamins, right? But we can't see or quantify, you know, how much grit you have.
Or culture.
Our culture, yeah. Right? We can't wrap our heads around it and say, here it is. Like, it's just something that you kind of feel.
You know it when you see it, right?
Yeah.
And that's what culture is. When you go somewhere, you can see what the culture's about. Is the culture about the stuff, or is the culture about the people? And, you know, when I start to field recruiting calls that come my way, you know, a lot of times the conversation or the questions I get are very banal and trite, and the same ones that they've been asking and told to ask. What do I get? What's the stuff? What's the sponsorship? What facilities do you have? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I always tell them, like, you get my attention, and you get the privilege to add to a culture where you will have teammates who are here because they want to get better and be the absolute best they can be. That's what you get, you know. And then it's also, then I say, well, what are you going to give? If you come here and you're part of this training group versus that training group, what is it you want to give? How are you going to bring something to the table? And a lot of times it catches people off guard, because you're used to just listing out the features and benefits of either your program or your coaching's philosophy or style or what have you. But when you start to engage the person, you say, look, this is much more about you being a collaborative entity and making a contribution than me just saying, here's the stuff. You come a part of this organization or this program, and this is what everyone here gets, and just get in line and go for the ride for 2 years, 3 years, or however long.
Yeah, you know, what I think it is we get on these default question and answers, right? We've all been through enough, you know, recruiting at the high school level and at the pro level, and you get used to these default questions, right? And the tendency is to give the default answer. And I think when you actually dig a little bit and get to people on what their actual motivations are, like, what are they expecting, right? What can they contribute? I think what that does is it weeds out the people who you don't want, right? Because the people, if you ask genuine questions that take them away from their default answer, like, if they can't figure out a good answer, then that tells you right there that like, they haven't thought about contributing to a group.
Right.
Right.
If it's not sincere, you know, that's a red flag, right?
Yeah.
And I remind people, this may all sound good and dandy in theory to us coaches. Like, oh, yeah, you want these amazing, genuine, sincere people who love the sport for what it is and who will show up every day of, you know, enthusiasm and integrity for it. But the reality is, you know, there's not that many people like that populate our consumer capitalist culture. But the way to get better clients, the way to get better athletes, whether you're working in the private sector as a coach or the scholastic sector as a coach, because you still have to recruit, you still have to go out, and you have to coach people to coach. You can't sit here pontificating if you're not at practice, you know, and writing training plans if you're not at practice and there's actual skin in the game. But get better athletes, get better people first and foremost, because you can develop people who are already very, very good human beings into very capable athletes.
And I think that's a good point. I think, like, it's important to understand that, like, not everyone's perfect, like, we all have our flaws, but, like, it's the people who are good people and are open and honest to be able to handle things. You know, I'll give you an example. I had a young athlete who had some, you know, let's say, some issues, right? Some issues that was hurting their health and also their performance, and right? And, you know, they wanted me to coach them, and we had a long conversation, and in that conversation, like, I asked them the hard question, said, hey, I've heard, or I know this might be a thing, tell me about it. And they were, you know, 100% like, yes, I've had this, and this is what I've done about it, and this is what I'm doing about it. Then we had a longer conversation on, are you willing to do the hard work before you even get to a point where you need to train? And they were like, yep, like, this is where I am now. This is why I wasn't at that place in the past. And then we went over, like, okay, how are we going to keep track of this and behaviors and all that stuff? And the point is, like, this person had struggled with stuff, but, like, had come to a place where they were in a position to deal with it, work on it, and all that stuff. They weren't perfect, right? But they were being honest with themselves and me, so I was willing to take that small risk and say, all right, like, this person, honesty, they're being genuine, we can work with that, let's try it.
It's a point of integrity, right? Second chances are brilliant because you get to start anew with a new program and a new coach, whether you're in the high school and scholastic recruiting process, or whether you're in the, you know, professional or private sector recruiting process. And the most important thing that I learned is when you have that dialogue with someone who's turning over a new leaf or who is growing from learnings of past failures, is to keep the integrity to a high account. To say, look, you said this is what you want. You said you were open to challenges. You said that I could call a spade and, you know, keep you accountable for what you're doing and what you're not doing. Remember that? And then, are these actions aligning? Because just like anyone who's ingraining new habits and behaviors and patterns, there's going to be some missteps early on. There's going to be some backsliding. And if it becomes habitual, that's then an important point to sit down and have a true heart-to-heart and say, look, you don't have to do this. I don't have to coach you. At the end of the day, it is voluntary on both sides. And if we're not both, you know, co-creating a new type of learning and environment that was mutually beneficial and symbiotic, it might be better to part ways. And some athletes aren't ready for that. Some people aren't ready for that because the maturity is not there. The willingness to be vulnerable is not there, which is all fine, right? But we'd be remiss if we just said that recruiting is about the black and white numbers on the piece of paper and then pigeonhole people as a 158 100 meter guy, a 435 mile female. Like, you, and also pigeonhole people as, well, they did this in the past and they're always going to be like this, so I won't even ask and I'll just assume. The question always needs to be aired. And that's what coaching is about, I think, at the end of the day. It's about agreeing to create an unconditionally safe environment where the athlete or person can be vulnerable, and judgment's not had as good or bad, but judgment is had on saying, well, it's impacting you beneficially or not beneficially. I noticed this. Can we change? You know, are you open to changing and bettering this? And they might say no, and that's okay too. But if you can't have those dialogues, even in the recruiting process where you're asking these genuine questions, that's another red flag. But the fun thing about culture, and I've, you know, and Steve has done this as well at U of H, I did it at Portland State, and we're doing it with High Performance West. When you're starting from scratch, or you're starting from a pre-existing culture that might not be the most sincere, or from absolutely nothing like we did with High Performance West a couple years ago, you get to create it, but you also get to learn through the bumps along the way. But you eventually, I found, right, you get a tipping point where you now get the culture you want. And the question I've asked Steve a lot in our time together here as he's been going through the scholastic recruiting process is, he'll ask me, oh, what do you think? You got this guy who has this PRs and this guy who has these PRs, pretty similar. I go, what's their cultural contribution? Are they a team player? How do you think they're going to impact? What? Who was more humble? Who was more excited? Who was more curious? You know, versus a lot of times we want to say if we're trying to sign an athlete or to a scholarship or even trying to work with them, is it worth the dollars, right? And I think you got to be more demanding with your time, and you have to be more respectful of your time, because that time on this planet is a non-renewable resource, and once you give it away, it is gone. And so you have to be very discerning with who you want to give it to, right? And yeah, we coaches think everyone has the most potential. Everyone can, you know, elevate and rise and be a champion. But some people just have personal or environmental or relationship hangups that they're not ready to get over, and it's going to cause an impediment, cause friction, and ultimately detract. And, you know, nowadays, Steve, like, with those things considered, how would you rank order your recruiting priorities?
Oh, man. So here's what I think is most important, is when you look at athletes from a time standpoint, which is what everyone does, I look at is, like, are you in the ballpark?
Right.
Right? Yeah. This is number one. Just get me in the ballpark, right? I don't care, really, if you've run 151 or 153 high. Like, you're all in the similar ballpark of, you know, pretty dang good high school 800 meter runner, right? And that's step one. And then step two is, all right, looking at the kid when they come in and they interact with my team, right? Because I think if you set your team culture well, your athletes will tell you everything you need to know.
Yes.
They'll be like, hey, coach, I really enjoyed that kid. That kid was awesome. I want him to come, right? They'll text me as soon as the kid leaves the visit, right?
Yep.
Or they'll sit there and be like, you know, the opposite is I've had really good athletes, recruits, who my athletes have said, hey, nope, this kid won't fit. And, like, I haven't offered him a scholarship, even though he would have helped us athletically, maybe. And then you have a wide range in the middle, but, like, those reactions, those, hey, does this kid fit in? And you can tell instantly when you talk to your athletes because, like, you know, they'll tell you, honestly, but also, like, if there's a delay or not, right? You know, when you meet someone new and you say, hi, how was that kid? And sometimes there's that moment of hesitation.
I don't want to say the real thing, but I want to be nice, but,
So you look for things like that, and if you got that hesitation in your head, you're like, no, probably not. Like, this kid's not, he might not be horrible, but, like, he's, didn't click very well.
I mean, you have to protect culture at all costs because we are all products of our environment. And the environment creates the culture creates the environment, right? It's a continuous feedback loop. And if it goes off and it goes sour and it goes negative, that's going to escalate. But if it's positive and if it's virtuous, that's also going to cascade in the direction you want. And so it's not that people as they are is what you're judging. What you're trying to do is you're trying to take bets. You're trying to say, well, a year or two from now, 3 or 4 years from now, do you have the core elements and ingredients that in this environment with the people who will be your peers or with me as your coach or within the culture that we have within our club team, within my private, coaching business, within my gym, within my scholastic team, will you in this environment add something and be enhanced and also enhance what we're doing? And that's very tough to do, but at the end of the day, everyone, I think, has a couple key tells they're looking for or not looking for, red flags. And those are the things that we consider a lot more now than just physical capacity, physical accolades expressed on the track, on the playing field, etc. Because there's a lot of impressive athletes who end up not panning out in the long term. Just before we wrap up here, Steve and I were looking at the Brooks PR High School Invitational Meet from 2011. And we looked at all these high schoolers who are now have become professionals. And we looked at the women's middle distance. A lot of names in the women's middle distance. Shelby Houlihan won the 800. Ajay Wilson won the 1 mile, right? Those are now U.S. champions. Those are now people vying for medals and finals. Those were people who are NCAA champions who stayed the course and had the capacity and had the desire and integrity to see this sport to the highest level. And then we looked at the men's results. And it's not a knock against those men or boys at that time, but we saw no familiar names who made any real huge impact as post-collegiates. They might have been very solid and very competitive collegians, but it just didn't translate for a variety of reasons. We can't pontificate at all. But it was interesting to see that trend from that class. And then we went and we looked at other results like 2012 or 13, and there is just this cohort of men that have now become pro. So it waxes and wanes and yins and yangs. But the thing too to remember is your environment is not just your team. It's also the people that you'll be competing against, hopefully for years and years and years and years. And again, it doesn't matter if you're in the scholastic setting or in the private sector. We all know there's like, you know, I have some private clients and athletes I work with who are not world class or national class, but they have people that they're trying to compete against too, and that's what gets them out of bed and gets them going in the morning. And I can relate because, you know, for a long time at the end of my career, being a local competitive athlete, there were just local people around that I wanted to, you know, compete against, and that really elevated me. But we created a culture, and it was awesome. We had this amazing locals team. Like when Steve was working in Portland, you know, we'd run this cross country series, and he and I would be battling it out. I mean, we'd battle it out at years before when we were both younger and fitter at Club Cross. But and here we are, older, wiser. Well, maybe not wiser, but just
definitely not fitter.
Definitely not fitter. I was not going to say that. A lot not fit, but still going out on the weekend and being, you know, a fall and like having some fun. So, I'm, you know, the continuum of culture, I think, is where this coach's car chat took us to. This is a great, great tangent. We started one place and we got something somewhere completely else. But it's important in the recruiting process, just as important as the ability to run a certain split, the ability to have had posted a certain mark, or the ability or capacity to have be in the ballpark in conversation for winning races. So hopefully that helps. We'll try to get another one of these here down the road, but appreciate you guys as always for being members of High Performance West. It's a great culture. Again, there's that big C word and community that we are co-creating with this contribution attitude. So I want to thank you guys for stepping up and being some of the first members that we've had and testing this out. And it keeps Steve and I really humbled and also very excited to keep sharing and sharing and sharing in the effort that we all get better. Thanks.